On our broadcast tonight, No Way Out. A snow emergency getting even worse. A rising death toll tonight as people are trapped, and we see the scope of this from the air. Showdown over immigration coming to a head tonight as the president boldly goes where he threatened to go, and it's controversial. Shootout on campus. A gunman opens fire. Students are hit. One of them saved, somewhat unbelievably, by the books in his backpack. Sudden impact. The urgent results just out from the new crash tests on some of the top-selling minivans on the road. And the master of stage and screen tonight, we remember the incomparable Mike Nichols. Nightly News begins now.
From NBC News World Headquarters in New York, this is NBC Nightly News with Brian Williams.
Good evening. The death toll has sadly climbed to 10 tonight in western New York, where so much of life remains paralyzed in a state of emergency in and around Buffalo, New York. The region Mother Nature has placed inside some sort of a bullseye. 135 miles of New York Thruway remains closed. Travel's banned in several towns outright after a second wave of snow, and now roof collapses are a big fear because of the weight of it all. Lester Holt starts us off tonight in a community with over 6 feet of snow on the ground.
Day three.
This is absolutely crazy.
And the snow keeps falling. And the weight of it all, over 5 feet of snow and counting, is beginning to cause roof collapses. More than 100 patients had to be evacuated from this nursing home in Cheektowaga today when the roof began to show signs of weakening.
The roof is compromised. Obviously, it has not collapsed yet, but there's potential for it.
In Hamburg, more than two dozen people, driven from the roads by whiteout conditions and deep snow, have been holed up in this Walmart store since Tuesday.
Couldn't ask for a better place to be stranded.
From the air today, we could see entire sections of the Buffalo area painted in white. Rooftops that look as if they've been slathered in whipped cream.
We've worked our way south of Buffalo, and it gets a lot worse. These are unplowed streets. Cars that were stopped in their tracks, buried in snow, barely the roof is visible. It's like the day the earth stood still.
But even as road crews make progress, there are neighborhoods still cut off, surrounded by chest-deep snow. We ventured down one cul-de-sac on foot, where we could only shout a conversation with Marianne Sansone.
Have you ever seen it like this?
I've never seen anything like this. I've been in this area my whole life.
Officials say they're doing their best to reach those facing emergencies and are reminding homebound residents to take precautions.
We've been stuck here since Monday evening.
We met the Schramm family last night. They're still snowbound.
This is frigid.
But today her husband David finally got out, walking 4 miles to get food for their baby Evan.
The first challenge I had to overcome was the 8-foot high wall of snow. When I finally did get to the store, it was a little disheartening to find out that the covered for bear, in a manner of speaking, but at least I was able to find, you know, 2 quarts of milk, which is better than none. I was also able to get baby food, which was a big plus.
Look at the people shoveling the snow off their roof. They've got 6 feet of snow on their roof, obviously concerned about a collapse of some kind. They can't dig their way out of this neighborhood.
Crews are clearing the New York Thruway, but it is still closed tonight, and hundreds of stranded vehicles remain.
You can see the wall of snow there along the edge of the lake. It's just a big gray wall.
Still buried under all that snow, Buffalo's Ralph Wilson Stadium, where tonight the Bills have declared a snow day, calling off Sunday's scheduled game against the Jets.
And that gray wall we showed you dumped a lot more snow here this afternoon. And one word about that woman you saw me shouting across the snowy yard to. She lives in that house behind me. And thankfully, she was able to get hire a crew that came in and dug a pathway. They can now get out tonight, Brian.
Lester, these scenes leave us speechless. I'm glad you found a way to describe it. Lester Holt in Western New York tonight. Thanks. Just a short time from now, in the face of fierce opposition, and as he threatened to do, President Obama will announce sweeping changes to U.S. immigration policy, and he's doing it on his own. Speaking from the White House tonight to outline his plan, our senior White House correspondent Chris Jansing is there for us this evening. Chris, good evening.
Good evening, Brian. Tonight, in a 10-minute speech, White House officials tell me the president will push the immigration envelope as far as his lawyers think he can go and make his case for acting alone. Already, both sides have launched aggressive campaigns to win the war of public opinion. At the Washington offices of United We Dream, immigration advocates are gearing up to defend President Obama.
We are giving a face to what many just think of as a problem.
Tonight, the president will propose the most sweeping changes to immigration in nearly three decades, allowing nearly 5 million undocumented immigrants to stay in the U.S. legally. People like Miguel Caceres, whose son Jose has always worried he'd be arrested.
It was an awful feeling to know that my parents, the only thing that they're doing is working to provide for their kids, to provide food, to pay for their rent.
Under the president's plan, the Caceres could apply to stay here. They've been in the U.S. the minimum 5 years and have a child who's a citizen. They'll qualify to get a Social Security number and be able to work, but are not eligible for Social Security benefits or Obamacare. More Dreamers are eligible, too, undocumented immigrants who have grown up in this country. And in a change, it doesn't matter how old they are, as long as they came here before 2010.
These are not felons. These are members of families. These are not criminals. These are children.
Deportation will now focus on gang members, suspected terrorists, felons, and anyone who's come to the U.S. since January 1st. Republicans are mobilizing the opposition, arguing even the president has said it's blatant overreach.
You know, I'm the president of the United States. I'm not the emperor of the United States. The president had said before that he's not king and he's not an emperor. But he's sure acting like one.
If President Obama acts in defiance of the people and imposes his will on the country, Congress will act.
So far, no indication Republicans have settled on exactly what they'll do, but they say it will be aggressive. And the president's answer, well, we just got some excerpts from the speech. He's going to tell them, if you question my authority to do this, then pass a bill. Brian?
Chris Jansing on the North Lawn tonight. Thanks. Live coverage this evening on MSNBC and our sister network, Telemundo, and streaming live, of course, at NBCNews.com. The students and staff at Florida State University tonight struggling with the aftermath of a terrifying incident on campus. Last night, a man armed with a handgun entered a library where hundreds of students were cramming for finals. He opened fire, wounding three victims as those inside went for safety. Our report tonight from NBC's Mark Potter.
Police identify the shooter as 31-year-old Myron May, a New Mexico attorney who was graduated from Florida State in 2005 and returned to Tallahassee just 3 weeks ago. Authorities say he was suffering a mental crisis and feared the government.
Mr. May had a written journal and videos where he expressed fears of being targeted.
Officials say just before 12:30 this morning, May shot two students outside the crowded campus library and an employee in the lobby. Student Sarah Evans heard a gunshot there and rolled her cell phone camera.
I just saw him laying behind the desk, just bleeding, wounded, just in complete shock, terror, not knowing what to do.
Warned by intercom, some students barricaded themselves in classrooms. Senior Jason Durfus says one of the bullets lodged in a book in his backpack, saving his life.
For me to still be alive was too many coincidences. That's got to be God.
Shortly after the first 911 call, police say they kill May outside the library after he refused to surrender.
Officials say at the time of the shooting, there were 400 to 500 students inside this library studying for final exams, and that the incident could have been much worse.
Police say May acted alone, but don't yet know why he opened fire here. Mark Potter, NBC News, Tallahassee.
On Capitol Hill in Washington today, an executive for the Takata Corporation found himself in the hot seat, apologizing for his company's defective airbags, believed to have killed at least 4 people in the U.S., injuring perhaps 100 others. That has led to a recall on 8 million vehicles so far. The feds want to see that number greatly expanded. The company is resisting. Our report on all of it from NBC's Tom Costello.
The most recent fatal accident tied to exploding airbags happened in Orlando 7 weeks ago.
She was in an accident. She's bleeding.
The front end damage to 51-year-old Hentrans 2001 Honda wasn't that severe, but the medical examiner determined she died of penetrating injuries of the neck. Family attorney Hank Didier.
What went forward towards her are metal fragments from the inflator itself.
It just came right into her face and her neck.
Literally shoots through the bag into her neck.
And the tip of the shrapnel had embedded in my right sinus.
On Capitol Hill today, senators heard from 29-year-old Stephanie Erdman, who was partially blinded in an accident last year. You're angry with Takata and Honda.
Absolutely. Absolutely. They knew about this information well before I even had my accident.
Honda today apologized and said it failed Erdman, never telling her of a recall during three service visits. Also today, we heard for the first time from a Takata executive.
We are deeply sorry about each of the reported instances.
Who says Takata does not agree with the government's demand for a nationwide airbag recall because its data does not justify it.
I think your company is making a big mistake.
The company says it first learned of a problem in 2005, 3 years before Honda's first recall.
Did Takata put profits ahead of safety, sir?
No response to questions from NBC or the Japanese media as an airbag giant finds itself on the defensive. Tom Costello, NBC News, Capitol Hill.
Bill Cosby is set to perform tonight at a benefit in the Bahamas for a volunteer service organization whose membership includes thousands of mostly African-American women in business. As that is going on, sexual assault allegations continue to swirl all around Cosby, and a newly released video shows him being confronted by a reporter doing his job, then pressuring that same reporter not to release his answer. Our report tonight from our national correspondent, Kate Snow.
Thank you.
Bill Cosby and his wife were interviewed 2 weeks ago by an Associated Press reporter about works of art he loaned to the Smithsonian. Toward the end, the reporter asked about old allegations against Cosby.
I just wanted to ask if you wanted to respond at all about whether any of that was true.
There's no response.
Cosby declined to comment several times.
I think you were told. I don't want to compromise your integrity, but I don't talk about it.
And then Cosby said this.
Now, can I get something from you?
What's that?
That none of that will be shown.
I can't promise that myself.
And I would appreciate it if it was scuttled.
Cosby asked his publicist to call the reporter's boss. The Associated Press says it decided to release the video only this week after more accusers came forward. And today, the story expanded again. Another woman said Cosby drugged her for sex.
Instead of empowering me like he said he does to people, he made me a victim. And all my life, I've been a victim.
Therese Serignese says she continued to see Cosby and later asked for and received thousands of dollars from him. Cosby's representatives had no comment today, but have previously said they would not dignify decade-old discredited claims with a response. Kate Snow, NBC News, New York.
Still ahead for us on this Thursday night, minivan owners who think bigger means safer will be stunned by the results of new crash tests. And there's bad news about some of the most popular vehicles on the road. Also, the iconic force behind so many of the classics for decades, from Hollywood to Broadway, as we bid farewell to an American legend. There are new crash test results out tonight, as we said, for minivans, the mode of transit for millions of American families. And the grades for some of the most popular brands will likely surprise the families who drive their kids around in them every day. In fact, safety experts said about these crash test results that one vehicle in particular, as you're about to see, was among the worst they have ever tested. We get our report on all of it tonight from NBC's Peter Alexander.
On the road, they're a family favorite, but owners who think larger means safer will be stunned by these results. Today, news that some of the best-selling minivans are failing a crucial crash test that simulates the front corner colliding with another vehicle, a tree, or a lamppost. The Insurance Institute for Highway Safety warns the Nissan Quest is one of the worst-performing vehicles it's ever seen for this type of crash.
We had to cut the seat out in order to remove the dummy, and then we needed a crowbar to pry the right foot loose.
In Houston, Catherine Fuller says she's now worried about taking her kids out in her Nissan Quest.
I always thought that since it was a larger vehicle and a roomy vehicle, that we were all safe.
Minivans are typically designed on mid-size car platforms, but they're wider and heavier. That leaves large areas less protected in a serious crash.
A high proportion of the minivan market is earning only a poor rating in this test. And those poor ratings are in some spectacularly poor crash test results.
The best performers, the Honda Odyssey, tested last year, earning a good rating, and the Toyota Sienna with an acceptable rating. But the Quest, the Chrysler Town & Country, and the Dodge Grand Caravan all received poor ratings. Nissan says it's committed to vehicle safety and it'll seek opportunities for improvements. Chrysler says its minivans meet or exceed all government-mandated safety requirements. Jarring results for safety-conscious parents. Peter Alexander, NBC News, Washington.
When we come back in a moment, the royal dress code just announced for a certain group of Americans because the royals are about to visit. A lot of food and beverage news tonight, starting with the downside of our diet. A new McKinsey study is out this evening showing the global cost of obesity. The cost to all of us and our healthcare system is $2 trillion. That's as much as the societal cost of smoking, close to the combined costs of armed violence, war, and terrorism. They say if present trends continue, upwards of half the adult population will be overweight or obese by the year 2030. Now to where food and drink are consumed in great amounts, TGI Fridays has announced a holiday gimmick. TGI Fridays restaurants in the UK will use a mistletoe drone to encourage kissing as it flies among the tables. So it is fair to ask, when you combine whirling rotors, batteries, remote control, human hair, and scalding hot beverages, what could go wrong? William and Kate are making a stop in Washington in early December, and because of that, and perhaps some perceived slovenliness on the part of the press corps on Capitol Hill in D.C., the folks who credential the press corps on both sides of the pond are out with separate memos now reminding journalists, some working 14-hour days in non-optimal conditions, to spiff up generally, adhere to a dress code, especially during the royals' visit. As they spell it out, that means pants or skirt suit for women, jacket and tie for men, and they note that includes technicians. When we come back, remembering the legendary director who gave us The Graduate, and back then he was just getting started. We learned this morning that Mike Nichols had died at the age of 83. In the sports world, guys like him are called a player's coach. In this life, he was an actor's director, and he died respected by all. He was wickedly funny. He loved funny people, and they loved him right back. And that was just the start of it. Mike Nichols first burst onto the scene as comedy wingman to Elaine May. He then quietly slipped behind the camera and in short order became the favorite of some of the best actors of our time.
The director is there for other people. The point is to help the actors. And if you can't help them, you're not doing your job.
They loved him for how he saw things. Case in point, his masterpiece, The Graduate. Other directors would simply show us Dustin Hoffman. Nichols chose to shoot him through the arched, seductive leg of Mrs. Robinson.
Mrs. Robinson, you're trying to seduce me.
And let us in on the key to life and financial success.
Plastics.
A brief list of his directing credits begins on Broadway. Barefoot in the Park, The Odd Couple, Death of a Salesman, Prisoner of Second Avenue. His first film, Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, received 13 Oscar nominations.
A great big fat flop.
Stop it, Mother.
I hope that was an empty bottle, George. You can't afford to waste good liquor.
Then came The Graduate, the film version of Barefoot in the Park, Carnal Knowledge, Heartburn, Silkwood, Catch-22, Working Girl.
I have a head for business and a bod for sin. Is there anything wrong with that?
For television, Wit and Angels in America. And on and on. In fact, he's one of a dozen people in history to have earned the EGOT, an unromantic Pentagon-like acronym for winning the Emmy, Grammy, Oscar, and Tony.
You see before you a happy man.
He was a kind of social and cultural anthropologist. His work tracked life in America, perhaps because he was an immigrant. Born in Germany, he changed his name upon arrival as his family of Russian Jews fled the Nazis. A bad reaction to a childhood inoculation left him without hair, and he wore wigs all his life, as he went about studying everything he could about people.
There's only one question. What is it really like when this happens? When somebody seduces someone, when somebody kills someone, when somebody loses someone?
Mike Nichols showed us to ourselves. his impact on the arts, on 50 years of American popular culture, is indelible.
If heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive?
Welcome, Mike and Diane.
And about that Diane he mentioned, that would be our friend Diane Sawyer, his wife of 26 years. Her beloved partner, Mike Nichols, was 83 years old. That is our broadcast on this Thursday night. Thank you for being here with us. I'm Brian Williams. Of course, we hope to see you right back here tomorrow evening. Good night.